All right, I'm going to call to order our March 20th, 2024 meeting of the Ventura Port District Board of Commissioners. Let's start with a Pledge of Allegiance. Sir, Brian's on the IR, so feel free to remain seated for the pledge. Sergio, would you mind leading us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And I want to say welcome back, Joe. Good to see you back in the saddle. Yeah. All right. Let's do a roll call, please.
Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Commissioner Brennan?
Present.
Commissioner Rainey?
Here.
Chair Blumenberg?
Here.
And Vice Chair Gardena will be absent today.
Right. Next item is adoption of our agenda. Commissioners, thoughts on tonight's agenda?
Move approval as presented.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda as presented. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing no opposed, we will adopt the agenda as presented. And we'll move on to our minutes from the March 6, 2024 commission meeting. Commissioners, did you take a look at the minutes? Thoughts on the minutes?
I move approval of the minutes as presented. Second.
So I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes as presented. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the minutes from March 6th are approved. All right, we'll move on to public communications, an opportunity for the public to address the board on any items that are not on tonight's agenda. Do we have any public communications tonight? Not seeing anybody in person. Do we have anybody online? All right, nobody in person, nobody online. We will close the public comments. We will move on to closed session report. Counselor?
Chair, commissioners, the board met in closed session to discuss the price and terms of payment of the two leases noted in the agenda. Instruction was given to the district's negotiators, but no reportable action was taken.
Thank you. All right, we will move on to board communications. This is an opportunity for commissioners to present brief updates on issues related to the port. Commissioners, any updates tonight? I want to share one thing. I've brought the Ventura Breeze before. I appreciate their extensive coverage of Portside. But really what I brought tonight was a good article on the squid season. And if you haven't read it, and you don't understand the squid fishing industry, it's a good little article. And it talks about how important the squid fisheries are to the Ventura Port District. So recommended reading, I'll pass it along. With that, we'll close the board communications. What's that? The title is When Squid Season is Upon Us, and it's from the February 21st to March 5th edition of the Ventura Breeze. All right, we are going to close board communications, move on to our staff and general manager report.
All right, Jennifer and the marketing team have given me some updates here to share with the group. March is Mermaid Month. Activation day this past Saturday saw upwards of 1,500 to 2,000 visitors, Jennifer. In Ventura Harbor Village, I heard the parking lots were full. This Saturday, March 23rd, the event is again scheduled for a second day. For Mermaid Day, however, the prevailing winds will determine the outcome of the event. So I guess stay tuned for that. For event updates, visit Ventura Harbor social channels and Ventura Harbor Village calendar of events. In conjunction with Mermaid Month, the Channel Islands Visitor Center is hosting a beach cleanup day starting at 9 a.m. And I think that goes till noon on Saturday for all to participate. I think folks gather down by the Visitor Center and Harbor Cove parking lot areas to have fun with that event. There was an on-air segment on KCAL, Channel 9, Los Angeles, that aired from a hosted media visit working with Island Packers to promote winter whale watching in Ventura Harbor and the Santa Barbara Channel as the new designation of a whale heritage area. Island Packers continues to report seeing high numbers of whales this past few weeks in the channel And whale watching typically continues through mid-April. Venture Harbor Village welcomes a new event producer on Saturday, March 30th. This is the Female Makers Market. Is hosting their first event at the village from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., featuring female artists and makers. In conjunction with the event, the Cottontail Bunny will be on site for photos as well as returning on Easter Sunday to greet guests. Our village artists have been invited to participate in the Female Makers Market as well. Live music every weekend during the spring break continues in March and into April, and Harbor Village Gallery and Gifts is hosting a plein air exhibit and plein air paint out on Saturday, March 30th. In the village, as several local artists paint harbor scenes throughout the day, followed by a plein air reception at 4 p.m. at Harbor Village Gallery and Gifts. As always, you have our departmental reports in your packet. A lot of great information in there. Some nice photos of the new office space up on the second floor, adjacent to Brophy's, as that has wrapped up and completed. Update on leasing reports, facilities, capital projects, Harbor Patrol, all the usual updates, including dredging as well. So, with that, Mr. Child, turn it back to you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chris?
Yeah, thanks. I noticed in attachment two, which is some really nice renderings of the 1575 building. How are you getting those out there? How are you using those? I'm curious.
So up to this point, this is actually the first public release of that information, and we wanted to bring it to your attention as part of the leasing strategy. Those are conceptual. They're going to obviously go through quite a bit of refinement, working through all the different building details and so on. But what would be some of the channels, Todd, that that we'd be looking at? Obviously, go on our website and also put it out through some of our media opportunities as well.
Yeah, I think we've know for a fact that our number one marketing channel is walk-through traffic. And as soon as the place is when it's vacant at the end of December, we started getting phone calls. Now that we've put signs up, we're getting more phone calls. We have more signs than in the works to go up. We already have a list of prospective businesses to contact, probably 10 interested parties. Some interested in one side, some interested in the other, maybe some interested in both. So we'll start with that list while we start to advertise and get this out of, on the web, as Brian said, on the website, discuss with brokers, et cetera, see what we can do to get our best opportunities to walk in the door.
Given the opportunity to enhance the facade there as well, we'll need to go through city planning processes and so on. But yeah, it's a first good look at some of the opportunity to, give that space a fresh new look. The patio area in front of it, we've repurposed that as a outdoor takeout area. Sergio, Jennifer, been working very closely on that. Wayne as well, doing some patchwork on the wall. But we're also looking to redo that front retaining wall and create an even better patio space than what's there today.
Well, the renderings are great. I mean, even though they, are early, right, and subject to change, they certainly do a good job of, I think, illustrating the potential, right, and the possibilities there. I think they look great.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, continuing on that theme real quick, this you show two options, one restaurant or maybe two different tenants. That's going to depend on who shows interest, right?
I've got a question about the save boat disposals. Is there a it says that additional boats are scheduled to be destroyed as space and weather permits. Is there a number of them that are it's pending and are they just sitting?
Yeah, so getting rid of boats has become increasingly more difficult. Nowadays, there are not the traditional avenues. It used to be we could remove the fuels and oils from a boat, take it to the local landfill, and they're no longer accepting boats. The local recycling center here in Ventura will only accept boats from us, but they're super discriminating. We have to basically jump through a bunch of hoops. So that leaves one option really, and that's hauling the boat out of the boatyard, prepping an area, and demolishing them on site, putting them in roll-off containers, and then trucking them away. So, as you could kind of surmise, there's a lot of prep that goes into it, a lot of loss of revenue while it's happening, and then loss of revenue while they mitigate the area back to its normal thing. So the boatyards aren't really excited to get a nominal amount of money to dispose of junk boats. So it's been really difficult. We had a small window that we thought we were going to be able to get a few in, and the directors, while they were kind of transitioning from the city project to back to their yard, unfortunately, they had some issues with their lift and weather, which delayed it. But I think from the last I heard, we hope to get, I think, maybe up to four boats hauled out this weekend and destroyed. But as I get rid of them, I'm getting people asking for help. So, it is a perplexing challenge.
John, and the asking for help, are they willing to contribute toward that? Or they're both, these are abandoned boats, and
Yeah.
it's the marinas that are asking, are tenants that are asking for the help, or individual boat owners?
All of the above.
Okay.
The boat or the grant covers both abandoned vessels and surrendered vessels. So ideally, we get them in the surrendered part, so you don't have to go through the lien sales and things like that. That's kind of the intent, so they're not abandoned and they don't sink on the waterways. But I'm still optimistic. In the future, I might be looking for assistance from the board in helping kind of lobby the local landfills to reconsider taking boats again, because it puts all the stress on me. And in this county, I'm the only one that's doing it. The county of Ventura didn't participate in the last round, so it yeah. We're making progress, but there's a lot of interest, a lot of interest.
Just out of curiosity, I mean, we, the city of Ventura, has a seat on Tolan Regional Sanitation District, as does Channel Islands Harbor, or Channel Islands Oxnard. So, I mean, there is that opportunity to do that. I'd be happy to work with you on it a little bit.
I'd
If
love
you
to help.
could just maybe send me the specs of what you were doing before. Happy to go in front of this region. You and I can get on the agenda, just go with public comment to the regional board and to the one of their meetings, and maybe make the case.
And we have a good track record to show that we're responsible and doing all the mitigation, so that when we're giving the boats to these places, they're not filled with water, filled with oil,
Sure.
or fuel. I'm really working with those boat owners to do it as easy and responsible as possible.
Great. Thank you.
John, stay up there. I'd like to ask you about so the dredges on site, are we pushing sand?
Dredges on site, they've been pushing sand for over 24 hours now. They start, Monday 4:30. My week's going by really fast, so as you can
Okay.
tell. they're making progress. They're out actually to the harbor entrance right now, so they started inside and they're working their way out. And there is going to be a little bit of weather this weekend, so there's talk potentially of relocating and tackling some of the other areas inside the harbor that are also on that on the list.
I want to compliment you on the Instagram post that showed, hey, pass the barge on this side, don't pass on that side. So good reminders to mariners.
I was impressed. I got as good of a reception this time around. Last time I did, I think maybe it was like two or three people said they liked it. So I tried to add a little bit more information to it. So yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was
Thank
good. Go ahead. Well, there was one more question. You escaped on me. I learned something in your report that in a La Nina year, the sand flow, the sand channel, and Brian, maybe you can help me on this, can actually reverse and flow north. I had not
Well,
ever heard that before.
yeah, so we have the large winter swells that are sometimes part of the El Nino, and that's the coming from the north northwest, and that typically will move sand down coast.
Yeah.
And then we have the neutrals, which are just pandemonium and can come from both ways. And then the La Niñas will sometimes have more of the southern hemisphere storms that come from the south. And when that happens, the waves bring that sand back up. So in a year like this, where we have a really strong sandbar off the Santa Clara River and south, we could see some replenishment annually during the wintertime. We lose beach as the sand moves offshore, and then towards the summer, it's called a summer beach profile, where it gradually comes back and builds back on its own. But it could be accentuated and helped with those south swells.
The surfing community looks forward to that. There's some pictures from Santa Clara on La Niñas that are actually world class with the offshore winds. I mean, it's amazing. You can see some of the video footage. It doesn't happen all the time, which people think it does and go down there every summer, but not the case. But you're right. And some of that does creep back up here and into the harbor mouth at the same time. That's why
That would
that
be
other
helpful.
jetty, the South Jetty, I think, was added to sort of st slow that migration of that sand coming from the south. Not giant swells, but certainly enough to move sand. And by the way, it doesn't take, I mean, what is there, 2 billion cubic yards of sand off the Santa Clara River? I mean, on a good winter swell, you can look out and see they're not breaking, though the Molloys a couple years ago did a video of actually foiling on 30-foot waves off Santa Clara River mouth. Because there's so much sand out there, and the bathymetry is so that it's not that deep there. Well, yeah, there's a lot of sand that can move back. So that dredge, we get our money's worth out of that dredge every year, whether it's coming from the north or the south.
I wouldn't expect it to be overwhelming to the point where it would fill in our harbor entrance from coming, but it would replenish that south beach. Some bleed over into between the two, which is kind of in a deficit. But that, as Commissioner Brennan mentioned, the groin that's there will deflect that and push it out to sea rather than let it come towards the harbor entrance. So, yeah.
Now we have a big deficit this year, so could be a benefit of that. Never learn something. All right, Brian, you had a
Yeah,
comment.
just related to dredging as a follow-up to the Port District presentation to City Council and a letter to City Manager. City has agreed to participate in some of the Inner Harbor dredging with the specific dollar thresholds that they're willing to contribute to the effort. So we have that in hand, and Todd is working with Manson to expand their contract to include a little bit of that work.
Fantastic. Great job.
Yeah. Good news. Good partnership.
I did have a realtor call me the other day asking about just that saw that presentation. And
Interesting.
she had a client that bought a house and brought his boat in, and it's sitting on sand in the back keys. So that's, I said, well, you might want to lobby the council. So I'm glad to hear that that's going forward. Excellent.
I had one more question on the staff reports. This one is for Joe. The loose cannon, I got a good tour a while ago. I see that they got permission to place concrete. Has that been done?
Yes, it's been done. All the plumbing, underground plumbing, and electrical conduits has been inspected and passed, and now it's in place already. So concrete's finished.
All right, and loose cannon, we're
On
hoping
the
for.
agenda later tonight. That was right.
I'll hold my
We
question.
might be able to help answer those.
All right. Thanks for the reminder.
Sure.
Thank you. All right. Looks like that is all the questions we have. So we'll move on to our consent agenda. We've got, let's see, A, B, C. We've got three items on the consent agenda tonight. Item A, out of town travel requests. Item B is a new lease agreement, and item C is our annual lifeguard services contract. So, commissioners, thoughts on tonight's consent agenda?
There's no public comment. I'll move the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second.
So I have a motion and a second. Before I take that vote, I'm going to pause for that public comment. No public comment in the room. Any public comment online? So we'll close the public comment. And all in favor of approving the consent agenda as presented, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the consent agenda is approved. All right, we'll move on to our standard agenda item number one, presentation by Ocean Rainforest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tonight, I'd like to introduce Eliza Harrison, Director of California Operations, and Brendan Cox, Project Technician with Ocean Rainforest. You're going to hear tonight about their efforts to bring and grow kelp to the Santa Barbara Channel, which they are already doing. So.
Well, good evening, Mr. Chair. Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Eliza Harrison. I'm the Director of California Operations for Ocean Rainforest. And I'm really excited to be here tonight to give a little bit of background on who Ocean Rainforest is as a company, as well as what we're hoping to do, what we have done in the Santa Barbara Channel already, and what our kind of future vision is, especially as it aligns with Ventura. Next slide, please. As a bit of background, Ocean Rainforest is a company that's been working for the last 15 or so years to improve people's well-being by growing seaweed while making a unique contribution to our blue planet. You can go ahead and flip to the next slide. We do have a team of innovators, researchers, entrepreneurs, business experts, all sorts of folks really spread internationally. I believe the last count was on across six different countries on three different continents, really looking to advance seaweed and seaweed aquaculture in a way that can be most sustainable and effective. Next slide. The company is based originally in the Faroe Islands, which for those of you who are not familiar, is a little collection of 18 islands located in between, if you draw a line straight across between Iceland and Norway, right above Scotland, incredibly remote area of the world, extremely exposed to hurricane force winds, waves, weather conditions, all of those things, fairly consistently. So if we think about, different weather events that we hear about that last for a day or two, maybe a week, their month of January is hurricane force winds. So with that as context, we have developed a facility to cultivate seaweed in these extremely exposed open ocean conditions. We have over 230,000 meters of seeded lines that are currently in the water across four different cultivation sites. And that's at our commercial scale operation, again, based out of Europe. We've also, over the course of the last 15 years, participated and or led over 15 EU projects related to seaweed cultivation, not only on the kind of specific seeding or harvesting side of things, but also on the product market development. And it's really, you can switch to the next slide. It's really in light of this kind of expertise that we've developed over this, more than a decade, that we were invited to apply as part of a larger kind of collection of individual organizations for a project under the Department of Energy's ARPA-E Mariner program. ARPA-E is the Advanced Research Projects Agency Energy, and was looking in 2017 at really building out the framework for developing a viable macroalgae cultivation industry in the United States. So the project name, Macrosystems, kind of moved forward through this application process, looking at demonstrating the feasibility of growing giant kelp, specifically in the Santa Barbara Channel. In order to do that, you need to design a cultivation system that is not only scalable and sustainable in the ocean, but also survivable, which takes a little bit of a different angle, given the Santa Barbara Channel in comparison to the Faroe Islands. As well as predictable and profitable in yield, because of course, if you want to run a company, you need to have that guaranteed profit, as you all know all too well. Next slide, please. So in 2017, we moved forward with this application to the DOE. We were awarded a phase one contract for about $500,000 in 2018, which was mostly focused on kind of the modeling of what it would take to cultivate giant kelp in the Santa Barbara Channel. So think, a techno-economic assessment, a finite element analysis, looking at what components you would need to actually have a system in the water, looking at site selection, all of those things. And we did kind of a good enough job in that context of the desk work to win a phase two contract in 2020, looking at actually taking that knowledge and that the expertise that we had developed in phase one and applying that at a demonstration project scale in phase two. And so the purpose of that project was really looking at to de-risk the full seaweed supply chain. So from seeding all the way through harvest, but also really optimizing those aspects and factors of seaweed cultivation, specifically of giant kelp cultivation, that have the largest impact on the economics and the profitability. Because again, we are looking to create this kind of viable industry that does have this consistent economic return on investment. Go ahead and switch to the next slide. Over the course of that phase two project, which again went from 2020 to 2023, we achieved a number of kind of key milestone successes. The first one was we installed or designed, installed, and successfully operated a fully functioning hatchery facility outside of the Dos Pueblos Canyon Ranch in Goleta, California. We also tested a number of novel seeding techniques specific to giant kelp cultivation. We seeded over 5,500 meters of line at a nearshore location, the Santa Barbara Mariculture site, where we were leasing lines for the 2021 and 2022 season. And on those lines, we did see, as you can see kind of in that bottom picture there, canopy development across all lines that in many cases met or exceeded expectation, especially for that 2022 season. You can switch to the next slide as well. In kind of concurrently to this kind of field work, we also moved through the process of submitting an application for an 86-acre demonstration project that is 5 miles off the coast. So we're thinking federal waters here. We started this application process in January of 2020, submitted the application in September. It was deemed complete in November. Public notice went through in December of 2020, and we won the permit from the Army Corps in 2021. The purpose of this permit was really looking at demonstrating, again, the viability of offshore seaweed cultivation, but this time in true offshore conditions, as opposed to being more focused on that nearshore environment. And it was really framed as an opportunity not only for ocean rainforest to... You're good. Not only for ocean rainforest, to learn about what it would take to cultivate seaweed in the Santa Barbara Channel, but also as an opportunity for stakeholders, for the regulatory community to understand what offshore seaweed cultivation actually looks like, what that entails, what that should require from a monitoring perspective, what the potential impacts to commercial fishing is, what the potential risks are for marine mammal interaction, all of those different things. So when we won this permit in 2021, you can flip to the next slide, we also had, remember, that canopy development that we'd seen in 2021 and 2022. And so the Department of Energy gave us additional funding. Sorry, the bullet points have disappeared on the slide. They gave us additional funding now to kind of operate that demonstration project site. It's also an opportunity for us to make a pivot from the more kind of focus on the cultivation side or our focus on the cultivation side of things, more toward the product market development. So understanding, okay, if we can grow giant kelp at a meaningful scale, what do we do with that kelp? How can we use it as a way to enhance the existing economies and the existing industries that are in the Santa Barbara and Ventura counties in a way that can really maximize the value of this biomass? And so that's kind of the focus of this phase three, which runs from 2023 to 2026. Flip to the next slide, please. We have in 2023, we were successful in installing our 86-acre demonstration project. We seeded it in 2023 and then again in 2024. And what's important here is not only has this site already served as a way to gather additional data in terms of the effects of seaweed aquaculture, not only on the existing environment, but also on existing industries. So think commercial fishing in particular. But it's also been a kind of pivotal turning point for the industry, as it is the first permit that's exclusively issued for seaweed aquaculture in the United States. And with that permit, we not only have secured that kind of piece of paper that says, yes, we can do this work, but we've also been able to say, not only can we do this work, but we can also grow the giant kelp. So those three images are images that have been taken over the course of, I believe, May, August, and then most recently, December, showing the giant kelp at our site. So we do, as a company, have good confidence that this can work at a commercial scale and therefore carry the significant economic as well as the environmental benefits that I will kind of jump into here shortly. So go ahead and switch to the next slide, if you may. So in that context, I'm very excited to be here today to kind of make the commissioners and the larger board aware of the fact that we are moving through the process of submitting a commercial scale permit application, which will be off the coast of Ventura. This site, as you can see from the slide here, will likely be in the N2D or in the N2 area of Ventura. So kind of that northern area, it's about 6 or so nautical miles outside of the port. So again, in federal waters. It's a 2,000-acre location So very similar to the Ventura Shellfish Enterprise that moved through the permitting application process some years ago. And the idea is that this network, this system, or this area of 2,000 acres will support somewhere between 20 and 50 of these ocean cultivation units, which is this larger network of highly tensioned infrastructure that goes in to support the cultivation of seaweed in this kind of offshore, almost suspended manner. The estimated yield, at least as far as we can understand it right now, is somewhere between 216 to 288 tons per ocean cultivation unit. Go ahead and flip to the next slide if you would. What's relevant here in the context of the Ventura Port District is the fact that not only would this project happen off the coast here, but it will require additional landside facilities. And so in that sense, looking at expended dock capacity or dockside support, so thinking cranes, boat hoists, things of that nature, additional processing facility space. So we're looking on somewhere of the order of 10,000 to 12,000 square feet of a processing warehouse where we would be able to move the kelp from its raw form into a storage stable product to support these kind of intermediate markets that we're looking to target. All of those things will need to kind of be put in place as we look to explore this commercial scale permit application. It will also be an opportunity for hands-on internships, collaborations with the local community to understand how we can really ingrain and educate folks about what seaweed aquaculture has to offer the larger community. To that end, and you can flip to the next slide as well, we do expect a fairly significant economic impact that would stem from this effort. So during project construction, we're estimating about 150 jobs would be directly created. And keep in mind, this is the full build out of our 2000 acre permit. This is not like the first year, if and when we win the permit. And then 350 additional jobs that would come kind of as indirect support. So contractors, welders, folks like that. During production, we would also expect somewhere on the order of 50 jobs to be created, both directly, and then about 125 that would stem from the larger community as we continue to move the product from our primary processing facility into these into existing markets that would then potentially make a pivot toward seaweed-related products. The gross economic impact more generally, we're looking at $30 to $50 million a year. Next slide, please. And aside from the economic benefit, which both from a business perspective, as well as potentially, and I hope from the Port District perspective, is attractive, we do see seaweed and seaweed aquaculture as being a very sustainable form of biomass production. Not only does it have the opportunity to kind of target the UN Sustainable Development Goals, specifically life underwater, but also carries this larger kind of economic benefit in terms of job creation, as well as the climate action piece, in that seaweed cultivation can often remove carbon dioxide and therefore help ocean acidification. And so it is this really interesting way of potentially utilizing that ocean, that open ocean space to produce a form of biomass that can be used to support all variety of industries, including animal feed, biostimulant products, things of that nature, and help us as kind of a community transition toward this more sustainable future. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions the commissioners may have. Thank you.
Eliza, great presentation. Thank you for coming tonight. That was really good. Before I turn it over to the commissioners, let me just ask for any public comments on that, because I know we're going to get caught up in a lot of discussion. So any public questions, comments, either online or here? So commissioners, thoughts on this?
I have a couple of questions. First, you in essence have done or completed a proof of concept from an economic and environmental economic assessment. So that's all done with the help of a federal grant. Okay. The second question, climate change. Will this have an effect on your model or your projections in, say, the next 20 to 30 years?
Great question. It's something that we're very actively working with a number of different universities to understand. So we've got an active partnership running with the University of California, Santa Barbara, looking at understanding how you can potentially kind of temperature tolerant shock giant kelp in a way that is totally natural. You just put the kelp in a little bit warmer water, bring it back to its normal conditions, and then use that as a viable way to outplant the kelp. in such a way that we'd be able to deal with kind of potentially higher temperatures in the water. We're also working with a number of different folks from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who are doing a fair amount of work on selective breeding to understand, how we are going to move the needle and also be able to adapt to potentially changing climates. So those projects are ongoing. It's definitely something that we as a company are very concerned about. But given the kind of genetic makeup, as well as the phenotypic variation that we find in Southern California, we are confident that if we move forward with this commercial permit application off the coast of Ventura, we will be able to still generate enough yield to make it an economically viable business.
And maybe following up on great presentation, and I heard your presentation to the month ago to the economic development of the chamber. So very well done. And exciting to know that I know when I first came to this country and started taking up surfing, there was beaches up and down the coast that had kelp on it. And great question about climate change and the water temperatures. And a lot of the die out was attributed to certainly water temperature change, but also certainly sea urchins at that time. So it was a combination. So obviously, with the amount of money you've got involved here, climate changes and water temperatures is a big part of what you're working on. So I'm glad to hear that piece. I guess a little moving away from just the actual operation, but looking at the equipment and how you do that, a low carbon footprint is everything you want to do. Obviously, some sequestration when you or uptake is you have frame there. I'm wondering, is electric any look at the electrification of the working fleet? I would think I know it's just starting to get there, but I think it's an important part of you can add to your when I say low carbon footprint. The Miami Boat Show this time around had probably outboard monitors that were electrical with a lot of. And the reason I bring that up is we have a boat yard here that specializing is framing around electrification of powerboat fleets and work boats. And I think if I'm talking about the whole sustainable question here, the ability to probably look at that whole equation and plug in electrical where you can. I just wanted to let you know that it's coming, and probably folks in your arena already know that. But the opportunity to be able to land some of this here, take advantage of that, and then perhaps have the boats worked on because we have a facility here, even almost gives us a double bonus for us. I guess the thing I wanted to get back to, maybe a quick question of staff, 10,000 to 12,000 square feet of sort of landed space. Where would we anticipate something like that? Does it have to be? Is it contingent upon being around the harbor? Can it be in proximity to the harbor? I know, and how far away? And that's where you sort of do the cultivation or manufacturing. Is that right? Where you get the product out of the kelp?
Yeah, so that's going to be the pre-processing area, and great comment in terms of the electrification opportunities. It's one of the reasons that we're really excited about, exploring Ventura Harbor as kind of the main landing base for all of this kelp, is because yes, we would definitely need work boats. Ideally, especially in relationship to the LCA that we've developed in the context of seaweed cultivation, that would be a significant part of making sure that this can be done in the most sustainable way. So having the opportunity to collaborate with folks out of the Ventura Harbor would be a significant kind of gold star badge for our company, as well as hopefully for you all as we kind of continue to move through this process of making the port as well as our organization more environmentally responsible. In the context of the processing facility location, it does need to, the seaweed does need to be obviously landed and then offloaded immediately when it arrives at the harbor. Once it does, though, the seaweed can go somewhere in proximity, so it does not have to be processed right away. It does have a tendency to kind of start to biodegrade over the course of 24 hours. So in that sense, it is important that we move it into this kind of primary processing strategy before that happens. But whether or not that happens at a facility immediately in the harbor or somewhere in kind of the general vicinity remains to be seen. And that's something that we'll continue to explore over the course of the coming years, if and when we are successful in this permit application.
Thank you.
So have you applied for the permit?
Perfect question. No, we have not applied for the permit, and this is really why I'm here. We are in the midst of preparing all the different documentation or all the different documents that will be necessary to apply for the permit based on what we did in the demonstration project. The process of actually applying for a permit for a commercial scale license in Southern California remains fairly ambiguous. We do have something to base
so
on.
We know.
Yeah, just stating the obvious here, just a little bit. But you know, we do, and really, as a kind of kudos to you all and the larger VSE effort, that was really formative in terms of how we were able to move through the permit application process. So thank you again for that. But in the context of you know what we where we are and where we're going. We do have all of those different documents that we are prepared to submit for review by the agencies here in the coming weeks. We do expect the permit application to go in sometime between the beginning of May and the middle of May, at which point, and as everyone who has ever worked with me will tell you, I'm extremely ambitious and optimistic about timelines. So I hope that we will have a public comment opportunity sometime in the middle of June. And really what we're hoping for and what would be excellent, and I know Brian will speak to this as well, we're looking for kind of additional public comment in the context of that public notice that says, you know, you all are aware of what is going on, what the proposal is, and the potential kind of benefits to the larger community that would stem from this effort. Because what we learned over the course of the demonstration project application is that letters of support are exceptional, they're incredibly valuable, but having that kind of as public record is even more so. And so that's what we would ask, and I will definitely follow up. And if you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer them. But that's kind of the timeline that we're looking for, is that like June public comment period.
And I won't even try to ask you how long you think it'll take for your permit to get approved. That's a big wild card. But you mentioned at one point kind of the phase one of, I'll call it construction, let's say, or development, right? What do you envision your build out time, if you will? So once you get the permit, it can actually get rolling. How long to get from that first line to your full?
Yeah, great question as well. We do expect to run a phased development approach. So that first year, we will probably put one system in the water, make sure everything kind of goes according to plan, make sure that everything in the context of the environmental conditions of the site that we're working is dialed in with the kind of gear that we're using. Probably the following year, we'll do two or three cultivation systems and then adopt a pretty aggressive construction schedule. So our hope is that within 5 years, we would have that full build out. And all of those, at least for kind of what's as it's relevant here and then potentially folks online, the whole system and the whole permitted area will be marked in accordance with the U.S. Coast Guard navigational safety risks or safety requirements. And there will be a notice to mariners every time that we move forward with that construction. So it should be fairly well understood and well known of what we're trying to do, when and why, so that everyone in the community is very much aware of like when we'll have larger boats out there. But ideally, 5 years after we secure the permit would be the full build out.
And when you say one system, what is that, like, is that an acre? And what does that mean, I guess?
So right now, and we're still kind of finalizing the finite element analysis, which we've done in collaboration with a company that's based out of Maine. They ran our FEA for the demonstration project. And basically what we're looking at right now is a system that's approximately 1,000 by 2,000 square feet. It builds out, at least in the context of the surface or the full expression, so including the scope of the mooring lines, as being about 58 acres. Give or take, we're still waiting to finalize those numbers, but that's generally how large they are. For context, our current demonstration project is 86 acres. The surface expression is about 16. So it would be a slightly smaller version of that for the first year and then kind of expanding from there.
One more, if I might. So when you talk about the market, what is the market? What does that mean?
So it means right now what we're looking at is kind of in that phase three, we're making this transition from the cultivation side of things more toward the product market development. What we're looking at least in the context of the Department of Energy contract is animal feed and biostimulants. Biostimulants are basically a glorified kind of fertilizer product. And most importantly, they improve a plant's resistance to stress. So if you think about where we live, wonderful California, still doesn't have a lot of water. So drought is a big issue. So especially kind of in the Ventura County, as well as in the Central Valley, thinking about a product that can be entirely sourced, that can be sourced entirely from cultivated giant kelp, that would then go to support the overall plant's ability to produce well in these otherwise very stressful environments would be very helpful kind of from an economic perspective on the terrestrial agricultural side of things. The other market that we're interested in is animal feed products. This is both pig and cattle feed. Pig feed has been shown, at least from trials that we've done in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. If you feed seaweed to pigs, it improves their gut microbiome. So it actually can increase the number of piglets they have per sow. It can reduce the amount of feed that they need. It can improve or reduce the amount of antibiotics that pigs need as well. So there's a very direct economic benefit to pig farmers. There's also, as you all may have seen, an opportunity to incorporate seaweed into cattle feed, which some species of seaweed have shown meaningful methane emission reductions. Ocean Rainforest is in the midst of exploring a project where you kind of create this kind of amalgamation of different seaweed species as a way to not kind of match potentially the 99% number that maybe some of you folks have heard, but look more at kind of a 15 to 20% reduction in methane emissions, and especially given the dairy cattle herd that's in Northern California, that could have a significant impact on the overall sustainability of that industry as well. So those are the two that we're kind of focused on right now.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate
You're welcome.
Brian. Michael, thank you. And I apologize, it got out of my mind before. But
good questions.
You mentioned N2 mm-hmm. as an area. And the criteria, it matches up with what you're looking for,
mm-hmm.
obviously, to go there. I'm wondering, have there been conversations with fishermen yet?
Yes.
And where that goes, as I just thought, certainly as just thinking about some of the interaction we've had. I was looking for a better word. Right word. Thank you. To just have those conversations to see and not get, at the end of something, so all of a sudden somebody shows up that, this everything was predicated upon this. Now we got to go look for something else. So I'm happy to hear that piece of it. And you just say about maybe going in June, but obviously you've had conversations with the environmental community. I would think, because you're working through UC Santa Barbara, I would think that those opportunities arise to at least be able to get the word out and look at it. So how have those conversations been going in relation to sort of the industrialization of the ocean? How's that? Just curious, because I always try to keep on top of that.
So. No, good question. And the industrialization of the ocean, I wouldn't quite use that terminology, but
I don't either. I'm just telling you what I heard back. So
no, fair, absolutely. And that has kind of been one of the pillars of Ocean Rainforest engagement. Yeah. We worked very actively with the commercial fishermen of Santa Barbara to understand how we could minimize the demonstration, the impact of the demonstration project. We also have experienced folks coming in at the 11th hour and issuing different complaints about the work that we were trying to do. So it is a really important conversation that we need to have. I've been in active communication with the commercial fishermen of Santa Barbara in particular for the last 4 years. I've spoken with the Ventura County Commercial Fishermen's Association as well. Brendan and I were there a month ago, and we'll continue to engage that community. So really it's not necessarily a question of kind of, at least from our perspective of coming in and saying, okay, we've talked to you, we've done that stakeholder outreach and community engagement, we're gonna check the box and move on. It's very much a question of understanding, within this area that we're looking at, which is a fairly large area, how can we arrange the site to minimize the impacts to existing commercial fishing activities? How can we mark the system in a way that is different? If you talk to any commercial fisherman that is running in and out of the Santa Barbara Harbor, at least by their account, our demonstration project looks like the Eiffel Tower, which to me is great because it means it's extremely visible. Thanks. And every single light is flashing at all different frequencies and you can't miss it. But understanding from them, how we can mark the system differently, how we can talk to, those communities differently in a sense that's okay, this is the navigational chart or this is the nautical chart that shows where we're looking so that you as the member of the commercial fishing community can understand, okay, where are we actually talking about putting this infrastructure? So it's been a conversation that has already started. It's very much ongoing. It will continue throughout the permit application and review process. And of course, it will continue during the build out because we do really want to make sure that folks feel like they're seen and they're heard in the context of their concerns. We obviously have been able to take into account kind of key fisheries. So if you're thinking about the state designated halibut trawl zone, obviously that pushes us into federal waters given the depth that we're looking at. We've spoken with members of the commercial squid fishing community. That's, you know, a really important industry, obviously, to the Ventura Harbor. Fortunately, they tend to, at least by my understanding, they tend to stay within that first nautical mile. So in that case, looking outside of that kind of state federal boundary means that we won't have a direct impact to those fisheries. But it's absolutely an ongoing conversation. I'm happy to speak with anyone here in more detail or anyone online about potentially ways to mitigate the impacts of a commercial scale operation further.
Thank you very much.
Got one more question. I see in number nine and number eight and number nine, industry and business. We usually use what's called the NAICS code, North American Industrial Classification System code. And the reason why we do that, I've worked for cities, because we want to know who our businesses are that are business licenses and using our services. So when I read preliminary economic impact assessment, jobs created, gross economic impact, I usually want to know what are their NAICS codes? Mm-hmm. Are they fisheries? Because there's NAICS codes for types of fisheries. There's NAICS codes for trucking industry. I guess, have you looked at, in terms of the industry in your value chain as you go in there, what? Because that, I think, will be very important for localities to assess what kind of businesses, and when you go to chambers of commerce, mm-hmm. what kind of industries are you looking at? Because I could tell you, I really love the concept. I really do. But I think a lot of people will say, okay, it's going to create all of this. Like, who? Is it construction? Is it transportation? Is it just fishing? And if it's some others, I think using something to categorize the type of industries would be very, very helpful, and probably bring in some partners that you may not be able to, you didn't realize were there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a great comment, and we'll continue to look on that. We haven't done a research that. We haven't done quite the granular breakdown of where exactly these industries are going to be created or where these jobs are going to be created. I can tell you that we have relied very heavily on folks who have experience working in the ocean because there is kind of a different level of facility that comes from knowing which knots will hold, you know, two different pieces of rope together, or understanding whether it's safe or not safe to go out in this type of wind swell and with this wave height and things like that, or wind speed and wave height and things like that. And that comes a lot from experience working in the ocean. So in that sense, the commercial fishing folks who have those expertise are going to be most likely affected or potentially benefit from an operation, especially because seaweed aquaculture is not something that requires year-round effort, especially in the way that we're thinking about it. It's a very seasonal crop. I mean, you think about corn, you think about things like that. It doesn't require folks out there every day, all the time, monitoring. It requires, you know, a fair number of people working during harvest season, and then the harvest season ends. So folks are free to kind of continue on as they please in different form or different industries with different economic development opportunities. But I do expect a fair amount of it would come from fishing. There will also be definitely a need for transportation. There would be a need for construction, especially in the context of like welders, as there will inevitably be different components of the system that need to be kind of fitted together. So things like that. But we haven't done that kind of granular analysis as of yet. But it's definitely a great comment, and we'll continue to take that back as we kind of flesh out this larger economic impact analysis. So thank you.
So first of all, the Port District, as you've mentioned a couple of times, has really looked hard at aquaculture. We would love to see aquaculture take off in the Santa Barbara Channel. So we're an eager partner to help you guys move this project forward. That said, as we looked at it a few years ago, one of the things we struggled with was trying to figure out who to get the permits from, who has the authority to grant those permits, et cetera. You're plowing that ground. We thought that NOAA was going to help us define that structure, define that framework. And NOAA is doing a study, supposedly coming out with some analysis of alternatives, mm-hmm. some designated sites. Where is NOAA today with that study? Do you know?
Yes. So NOAA has been an excellent partner to our work, especially the NOAA NCOS team. They've done a lot of the site suitability work in the context of not only our demonstration project, but now our commercial scale application. We are relying very heavily on them in the context of the aquaculture opportunity areas that were advanced as part of the executive order in 2020. My understanding is that that programmatic EIS will come out for public comment sometime this summer. That will kind of offer an opportunity for public comment for those 8 sites that were identified by NOAA off the coast of Ventura as being viable for aquaculture development. We've continued to rely on them very heavily, though, in the context of the additional data layers that we as a company cannot access because, for whatever reason, it's DoD or things like that. And I'm sure you all are all too familiar with that process. They've been a really important asset for us. We are very grateful to be able to work with them. That said, at least as it currently stands, they will not be the permitting agency. We will continue to work with the Corps and the Coastal Commission in kind of principle as we move through this permit application process.
And you've presented to the Coastal Commission?
We have engaged the Coastal Commission very actively. We haven't presented in any sort of formal setting, just because, at least is my understanding, you need to have a commercial permit application that is under review that is associated then with a voluntary consistency certification. So we don't have those things, but they have been involved in every conversation. They are involved in every one of the semi-monthly survey reports that we have to send for our demonstration project. And so beginning to kind of create that repertoire. And that framework for them to understand, what a seaweed cultivation facility would look like, especially kind of at a demonstration project scale, but then also ultimately at scale, has been really helpful. But we totally recognize that, there is an Army Corps process and a Coastal Commission process, and we are kind of navigating how we honor both regulatory agencies as we move through this application review. But they've been a really important piece of the puzzle as well.
The pictures, a lot of the pictures that you have in here, especially the underwater shots with the diver, are
Mm-hmm.
those from your Santa Barbara demonstration project?
The one with the diver is from the Santa Barbara Mariculture site. That was a colleague of mine, Courtney Schatzman, that was taken in April of 2022. But it does show the kind of canopy that we're looking at. The other picture on that same slide is me at our demonstration site diving in November with the PI of the project.
So we're the water depths there, you're less than 100 feet.
Yes, so the system itself is set at about 30 feet. The idea is that we're creating a suspended kelp forest. The water depth of our Santa Barbara Mariculture site, I do believe, was maximum 90 feet, mostly because that's what my dive computer read. But our current site is in 240 feet of water. So the only way that we can get to the bottom is using an ROV, which is what we do if and when necessary.
Okay. And Ocean Rainforest, you guys are a nonprofit?
For-profit organization.
You are for
We
profit,
are a
is it?
spin-off of Ocean Rainforest SPF. But yes, Ocean Rainforesting has been established since 2017 in California.
Okay, for profit and making a profit. Very good. All right, so I think I'm going to, with this next question, I'm going to segue back to Brian. How does the Port District help you guys move forward?
Well, I think from our perspective, we've got some recommendations here for you tonight that are very consistent with the direction that the board took when we transitioned from applicant to advocate. We were once an applicant. We didn't move forward with that based on the regulatory hurdles that we faced and issues with the Regional Land Planning Association. But as we made that transition, the direction that I received specifically is sort of embedded in our 5-year objectives was to, as it says here, engage with commercial fishing and sustainable aquaculture interests in Ventura Harbor. We can't think of a more sustainable form of aquaculture than macroalgae. They're using a lot of the information in terms of the regional siting for this project. If I'm correct, I think this overlaps probably some of the exact area that we were studying. So further proof of concept that you've got a for-profit industry ready to file a formal application. They're already in the water, proving the concept as we speak. So from where I sit, this is completely consistent with the board's direction and the 5-year objectives. Again, the transition that we made to be advocates for this type of aquaculture, potential benefits that you heard relative to using Ventura Harbor as a offloading facility, potential for additional facilities. Maybe it's in part at the harbor, maybe it's within the community. Either way, if we can grab this supply chain and keep it here locally, I think that's a great opportunity for the community and for the Port District as a whole. And given the fact that that Eliza's prepared to submit applications in May with hearings, or at least the initial public comment period as soon as June of this year, I would like the ability from the board to engage in terms of formal written comment, but there certainly be follow-up public hearings and be able to provide public testimony at those hearings that a farm such as this, proximate to this harbor, helps us keep our working waterfront moving forward, provides economic activity, and is a sustainable form of aquaculture close to our home here. So that's how I view this in terms of everything that I know, and would look for the board's support of that.
What kind of environmental document will be done?
This is the million-dollar question, literally and figuratively. We are in active communication with the Corps, the Coastal Commission, as well as NOAA to understand what kind of documentation they will require. Know that Ocean Rainforest, as part of our demonstration project, will be prepared to submit an annual report documenting the impact to the marine environment, the marine ecosystem, commercial fishermen, all of those different industries in May, so that will be concurrent to any sort of application. And that will, in many ways, in addition to the application, inform how we move forward with a EA or an EIS. But whatever it is determined, that will be in the Corps' court as to how they move forward.
The reason I ask is that the wording that we have here, I mean, it's fine, but I think we want to be clear, and I think the commission has always been that we're support. I think we need to be supportive of your application to proceed with the project, right? Because we don't have that information yet. Because one of our, you know, baseline things is this needs to be sustainable, environmental, right? We have to make sure, and I think it's going to be. I'm very confident, but I mean, I think until we see the reports on that, that we can't just, I don't want to say blindly, but some people might perceive it as such. Oh, we support the project, right? Regardless. Well, we don't. We support this project when it's found meet those criteria. So that's why I think I'm totally supportive of what I'm hearing. And I think I like your recommendation, but I just want that little caveat in there, my opinion, that make sure that's included in.
Any suggestion in terms of that little bit of a nuance relative to environmental? Are you specific to the environmental review process, or that might help me?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, I think we've all been quite clear. We want this to be environmentally sustainable, that this needs to be a project that is not going to in any way have a negative impact on the marine environment, right? I mean, and while we expect that to be the case, I just don't want to assume it or presume that it's going to have it at this point.
I think it's implied, but we want it implicit in some type of a way.
O'Brien, you're looking for a vote, an authorization from the commission. So the wording then becomes important.
It may be your exact recommendation language you have in here, and I'd be comfortable even if it was just in support of Ocean Rainforest proposed application for commercial microalgae, right? So that's what we're supporting now. We're supporting this application for this project, right? And then once we get through this process and it's been demonstrated to us, then we move in, so to speak, with a full support of the project to move forward.
Okay.
You know, that kind of a
thing. Yeah, so what I'm hearing is support of the submission of the application for this project. Okay.
All right. So I think I've got
so moved.
Second.
I have a motion. And do I have a second? Then I got a motion and a second. to authorize the general manager to, did you take good notes on that?
Support the submission of an application for a macroalgae farm of up to 2,000 acres proximate to Ventura Harbor, with the proposed future use of Ventura Harbor as the landing facility for said kelp.
Well said. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, we look forward to the next steps and appreciate your energy and enthusiasm for a very worthwhile goal.
Thank you very much.
Great presentation. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If anyone can pull this off, you're the person.
Well, it's always a team effort, so I really appreciate your help. Thank you.
Don't talk so much next time, Brendan, okay?
So when last time we heard about a great business opportunity, we took a field trip and did some homework. So I vote Faroe Islands, Santa Barbara. Can I dive the site?
He wants to dive. That's what this is all about.
Sorry, everything's on the record tonight, just for the record. Thank you very much. We will move on to our standard agenda item number two, which is approval of a holdover agreement and license with TBBW. Brian, I will turn this over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, we have a PowerPoint presentation for you tonight to walk through our item, and I think we're also going to have some guest speakers tonight as well as part of conclusion of my presentation. So Jessica, you can go ahead and go to the next slide. I'm going to start off with a visual. This is obviously an aerial view of Ventura West Marina in its present state. A little bit of port side there just to the west, and of course the port side development to the north, Four Points by Sheridan to the northeast, and Holiday Inn Express to the east. Right in the middle of the site is the main building facility at Ventura West Marina, with the parking lot area surrounding it, a couple of ancillary buildings on site as well, and all but that one row of boats to the west is Ventura West Marina, which has how many slips today, ballpark? About 390 boat slips today. So thank you. I think that's Jessica. Thank you. We'll go ahead and go on to the next slide. Okay. So parcel 17 is the parcel number. That's the Port District's parcel number numbering for it. TBBW has been the master tenant of the site since 1974 and original developer of Ventura West Marina. Associated entity, Beecham, has been the operator since 1977, just a couple of years later. The 50-year lease for the master lease expires today, and the tenant has had a right of first refusal within the lease that they have, which they did request to exercise. On June 21st of last year, the board received from the team that you see in the audience tonight, received an informational report regarding preliminary vision and concepts for the site moving forward. And that included modernization of the marina and also redevelopment of the land itself. Board authorized myself to enter into and initiate formal lease negotiations, which we have done. And we're going to talk about the process that we have before you tonight to move forward with the site. Next. So let's start with a little bit of background in terms of the development team. Dick Beecham is the original and current managing principal of TBBW. He was the developer and managing principal for the master tenant for Ventura West Phase 2, which is also here in the harbor on the other side. That's lease parcel number 7, which was built in 1982. Mr. Beecham and family partners and related entities have extensive experience in developing and operating Southern California marinas, of course, the two here. But in addition to that, at Dana Point, Dana West Marina, 980 slips, Harbor Island West Marina in San Diego, 620 slips, Pier 32 Marina, 250 slips in National City, and Point Loma Marina, 60 slips, also in San Diego. Eric Leslie, who is here tonight, Director of Marina Operations for Beecham for over 30 years. He is the lead on marina acquisitions and development, oversees the property management operations for Beecham, and has been and continues to be one of the principals in the recent marina developments. Aldersgate, Matt Mancy, here this evening, Chief Operating Officer. Aldersgate is a local family-owned, multi-generational real estate development and construction firm with over 40 years of experience in Ventura County. They specialize in residential, multifamily, and mixed-use buildings and development. And in terms of some of their local activity here, the Mark Camarillo, Press Courier Senior Apartments, Park West Camarillo, and Vista Urbana. Next. I wanted to touch on, it's been quite a team that's been working on this effort since last June. I wanted to highlight our ad hoc committee appointed by the chair, Vice Chair Jackie Gardena, not here tonight, but very involved in this process, along with Commissioner Chris Stevens. I want to thank both of them for their effort in that. In terms of counsel for the Port District, both from Lagerlof Partners, has been Pablo De Leon and Tom Bunn. I want to give a particular shout out to Pablo for his daily work on this project for some period of time and helping to get us to the finish line here. Robert Smith was brought on a special counsel related to CEQA matters, and all three attorneys are not here personally, but they are on the line here tonight. If you have questions for them, and then Todd and myself at the staff levels. Additional staffing with TBW and Aldersgate. Bruce Stewart has been involved on behalf of those two partners. Natasha is here tonight, McCarthy Delamere, and Justin Papa with Beecham as well, not here tonight, but participating in some of the meetings. Oh, he's online as well. Thank you. Next slide, please. So as we look at this, and we're going to get into the details of these two, what will be two different sites, we've identified a landside site, which is perimeter is in green. It literally is the landside of the current parcel 17. And then the waterside, which is in blue, surrounding the existing marina areas that you see there on the screen. Next. So in terms of the waterside, the proposed project and recommendations for you tonight would be that TBBW at this time would obtain a holdover agreement and a license agreement, and they would continue to operate Ventura West Marina in its as-is condition. While they're doing that, they would pursue waterside marina modernization plans and have the opportunity to be considered by the board for a future 50-year lease. That's an overview, but I'm going to get into a little bit more detail in the next slide. So the major steps in implementing this waterside project would be the development of the plan itself. So the marina life expectancy is short of 10 years in terms of the improvements, and that would most likely be with a lot of ongoing maintenance for what is a marina that is ready to be redeveloped and reconstructed. So the likelihood is that lifespan could be even shorter. So the intent of TBBW here would be to develop a brand new marina. So Eric helped me there, about 390 slips today. That entire marina would be replaced. So they need to develop a plan for that. That would include things like the marina design, the slip mix, boater amenities, et cetera. Any project of this nature needs to go through an environmental review. So after they develop that plan, they would bring that to the Port District. We would begin to review it. We would also act as lead agency with regards to the processing of the environmental review process under CEQA. The Port District would give project consideration and final approval, consider final approval after that environmental review is completed and the board has had a chance to certify that document, whatever that document may be. Obviously, there's a multitude of regulatory entitlements and approvals that are needed after the project comes through the Port District, City, Coastal Commission, and others. That is takes a fair amount of time to complete. In terms of project financing, at that point, the team would be putting together whatever combination of equity and financing that they would use to build out the marina. And at that time, Port District could consider a 50-year lease at the conclusion of that of all of those processes. The holdover agreement, as I said, will allow the TBBW to continue to operate the marina as it is in its present state while the project goes through an environmental review process and all of these other layers of needed improvements. License agreement will provide them the access to both utilize and maintain the landside facilities and parking necessary to operate the marina. The holdover agreement that is part of the package is for a period of 3 years. The development teams believes that they can do this in roughly 24 months or so. We've added additional time to that for a total 3 year period, just knowing that entitlements are obviously a very comprehensive effort and can't come to an exact amount of time that'll take from start to finish. Parcel 17 went Ventura West Marina Waterside. In terms of fiscal impacts, looks like I got the tenant name there wrong, but TBBW will reimburse the district's legal consultant and staff costs associated with processing of the agreements, proposed project, environmental review, and lease documents. This is consistent. The environmental review that we've done on several other master tenant proposed projects where the master tenant funds that activity, but again, the Port District both retains and directs the environmental consultant to maintain that independence. Right now, in terms of legal expenses separate from environmental, we have an estimate of roughly $75,000 for both the waterside and landside agreements. There will be a new updated minimum monthly rent. The way the master tenancies work is there's a minimum monthly rent that's typically adjusted every 5 years. It just so happens this is right about that time to make that adjustment. We're either at the 4 or 5 year mark, but either way, we're heading into a new period of time. So this number updates that. And on the land side, a more minimal amount of 800 in terms of monthly rent. Both these sites are applicable to percentage rent, so it's always the greater of the two. The minimum is just that, the minimum. If the percentage rents are greater, that's what they pay. For the water side, they will place a greater of 300,000 or 50% of marina annual net profits into escrow each year. This is to create a construction fund that's, let's call it a down payment. Towards the cost of a marina, which could cost anywhere from $16 to $18 million, I believe. So this project construction fund will be utilized towards, as I said, the cost of marina modernization and released back to them once they've completed all their entitlements, all those other steps are done, they're ready to break ground, or in this case, break water. They will have the opportunity to receive these monies back towards their total cost. And moving to the land side now, sort of following the same format we just did on the water side, TBBW will obtain, along with Aldersgate, will obtain an exclusive negotiating agreement, or an ENA as it's known. They will pursue a mixed-use residential redevelopment project plan and also have an opportunity in the future to be considered for a 50-year lease. And same, I'm going to in the next slide, go over this in more detail. So similar to the waterside, completely separate project here. They will work to develop the landside plans, For example, residential unit mix, commercial uses, public amenities, likely affordable housing component, market rate housing. Those are all things that both they will evaluate and probably be subject to in terms of city process. Same thing, environmental review under CEQA. Again, the Port District would act as the lead agency. They will fund that activity. No action would be taken on the project, or at least until after that is all completed. Project consideration, final approval by the district, and regulatory entitlements and approvals. Again, most of that work will come after the Port District has done the environmental work and approved the project itself. Other requirements, again, to be able to be considered for a lease would be project financing in place. Again, they'll probably use some combination of equity and debt capital in order to move forward with the project of that scale. And there'll be construction, completion, security, necessary completion bonds, payment bonds, those kinds of things to make sure that the work is done. Again, the district at that time could consider entering into a 50-year master lease when that process is complete. One note here, any future landside lease, if any, will be required to provide the marina with the minimum facilities it needs to make sure it can accurately and operate the facility on the marina side. This document's a little bit longer. It's 3 years also, but it does provide for up to 3 1-year extensions. We believe the entitlement for this project will be more extensive than the marina because you're going from commercial only uses to mixed use uses, which changes the land use. So on the water side, you're going from a marina to a marina, right? So Coastal Commission and others will be interested in slip mix and some of those different things I touched on. But because of the land use change here, we anticipate this will potentially take longer. But in terms of the timing, from our expectation, both of these projects run concurrently in terms of starting. If the board approves these tonight, they both move forward, and the efforts begin on both land and water sides. Fiscal impacts are mostly similar. This is duplicative in terms of the costs that they will help the district with. On this side, though, they will provide a deposit towards these expenses. I should say they did provide us with the down payment towards the expenses when we initiated this several months back to the current tune of $25,000. The account will be drawn down. If it hits $25,000, we'll ask for an additional reimbursement, additional cash to bring that number back up. And of course, we'll certainly provide whatever documentation they would like to see that reasonably shows the expenses involved with this. Most of the consultants we use obviously give us, monthly invoices, et cetera. We'd be able to share that information. Next slide. So I sort of conclude with this, which I think both the process that we've been engaged in for months and the opportunity reflect what is in our board report, which are both our guiding principles and the 5-year objectives. On the guiding principles, establish and implement harbor-wide environmental sustainability policies with our business partners, and building a brand new marina certainly provides that opportunity. New landside facilities provide that opportunity as well. Building respectful, productive relationships with our stakeholders and tenants, which I think we've been able to do here, certainly consistent with our guiding principles, and coastal serving amenities, services, facilities, and infrastructure. Again, they'll start working on design, but I know that the Port District will look for high-quality projects that will benefit the harbor, the community, visitors, et cetera. In terms of our 5-year objectives, engage in support of master tenants for successful business operations at the harbor and evaluate opportunities for parcel development. I think staff has done that here in partnership with the master tenant to view this property 50 years later and begin to see what the opportunity might be for the future. So I think that is our last slide, and I will stop there for the moment and turn it back to you, Mr. Chair.
All right, before I turn it over to the commissioners, let's ask for any public comments. I don't see any public comments Eric?
Thank you. My name is Eric Leslie. I'm, as Brian mentioned, I'm the Director of Marine Operations for TVBW. And we don't have a whole lot to add to the presentation that Brian just did or the presentation that we did in June. We're primarily here this evening to encourage you to embrace the staff recommendation to move forward with the documents that Brian mentioned. To extend the current arrangement and to direct staff to continue with the negotiations on the project and the vision we presented last June. And we our enthusiasm for that project hasn't changed. It's probably grown a little bit, but we think that as we represented back then, that it's going to be a tremendous improvement for recreational boating. We think it'll provide opportunities for residential component and a commercial component that will add to the community, and not the least of which it'll also there'll be additional public access to the waterfront, which I know is important for public agencies like the Port District. So that's I think we still have that shared vision. We're ready, willing, and able to move forward, and so we encourage you to support the recommendation. But before I jump off, I do want to take an opportunity to thank port staff for all the time that they put into this process. Over the years, we've dealt with a lot of public agencies up and down, mostly in Southern California. And I don't recall that we've dealt with a public agency such as the Ventura Port District that was more responsive and more collaborative than kind of what we experienced recently. And Brian, give a shout out to your attorney, Pablo De Leon, and he did some awful heavy lifting over the last couple months, and he probably deserves his own individual shout out. But port staff was timely with all the responses that they needed to provide. In fact, they kind of forced us to raise the bar and reciprocate their responsiveness. Your counsel was equally responsive, and sometimes because we didn't necessarily agree with your counsel's response, we were hoping they would have taken more time to get back to us, but it didn't happen that way. So in any case, we're hopeful, and we're ready to move forward. And if you have any more questions when you get to the question part, be happy to answer any questions.
Eric, thank you. Matt?
Good evening. My name's Matt Mancy with Aldersgate. Happy to be back here. And yeah, I just want to echo what Eric said. That was really well said. I worked with a lot of public agencies as well, and you guys, your staff has been amazing. You have a real gem in Brian. And so yeah, we're here. We're excited to move forward if we get a favorable vote, and work towards building a really beautiful facility. So thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for joining us tonight. Any other public comments in the room? Seeing none, do we have any public comments online?
Yeah, we have Dick Beecham on the line. Hold on 1 second. You can unmute yourself and speak.
Oh, okay. Well, I think Eric did a good job, but the job that I want to applaud is that is the one that he alluded to, and that's the district and Brian and his team. I think the collaborative process, the diligence that was paid to this this effort, and I have to throw in creative as well, because it was it really checked all the boxes in terms of effort and intelligence, and I think something that a result that really puts us all in a place in a position to succeed. So, I've been around a long time, and both Eric and Matt have talked about it, that having this kind of an experience has been just an absolute gift. And we've as you can kind of see the number of marinas that we've been involved with, but This is really special. So we look forward to the continuing the relationship and to provide the district with the kind of facility that you know that we think it deserves, and that's going to be first rate. So anyway, thank you all for listening, and the team again for making this happen.
Dick, thank you for those comments. It's kind of a late night for you, so I appreciate you making the time to be with us tonight.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Jessica, do we have any other public comments online? No other public comments, so we'll close public comments, and I'll bring it over to the commissioners. Thoughts on this somewhat complicated recommendations in front of us tonight? Questions? Brian?
Well, more comments than questions. I think really I've seen this a number of times and got the presentation earlier. Through that, we've worked in closed session, worked through some of these the opportunities to come up with what Brian has been able to bring forward here tonight. And those quick responses back to you might not be what you wanted to hear, but there was the collaboration for somebody that's been with us for 50 some years as a partner already invested here. I think it's really the effort that I think that the standard that's Brian's raised in terms of the staff between the prior lease with director and trying to make all that happen in a short period of time, and having a team of legal folks that can look out for both our interests, but also sort of the collaboration interests to make sure that we get to the finish line, I think is very important, because what's laid out here to me is something that's, you know, it's the Ventura Harbor. It's not Marina Del Rey. It's not Shelter Island. It's going to be Ventura Harbor, but it's going to, with those components of the residential and commercial, I think that this is needed. This harbor is needed for a while. And so, and we're moving in that direction. And certainly the team that's come together here, I think, in my mind, and looking at the paperwork, gives me a lot of confidence that we'll reach an end point. So there wasn't a lot of questions. It was more just thank yous and comments, because we've seen so much of this and helped form it already. So thank you.
Yeah. Well said, Brian. Other comments, questions?
I guess since I'm on the ad hoc committee, I should make some comment. I think that the appreciation for the fact that the land side and the water side improvements are really distinct and separate from one another is what kind of drove us to the package that we have in front of us today. We have docks that are aging. That's a must do. That's a project we have to do and need to get it done, and sooner rather than later. And the land side improvements are something that we love the presentation. I mean, these are things that we want to have done, but they can be done on a separate schedule. And in fact, in this case, you've actually brought someone on your team, the kind of a separate entity in a way. So the approach that you've come up with, that everyone has worked together on, by kind of, I'll say, bifurcating the project, I think is a terrific solution, and totally supportive of it. And the ad hoc committee, I think, I'll speak for Jackie, is very supportive of it.
Yeah, I echo your comments, Chris, that this combination of a holdover agreement for the water side portion of it, the license agreement for the shore side, and then this exclusive negotiating agreement gets us to that vision that you guys painted for us back in June. I think we love that vision and want to see it come to fruition. Recognize that it's going to take some time, but this keeps a good partner, a good teammate engaged. So good solution, good work by all. Pablo, thank you for all your hard work. And Robert, welcome back to that team. So, all right.
I move the recommended action.
Second.
So I have a motion and a second to approve the recommended action, and the recommended action is rather complex. So I'm going to just refer to the paper and ask for all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. The agenda item is approved as presented.
Thank you.
Well done. Thank you. All right. Well, that was a lot of work by a lot of people. Let's move on to standard agenda item number three, which is the one that I wanted to jump on earlier. And this is a amendment to the lease agreement with Aramark Beer Garden Incorporated.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I thought we might have a better chance to kind of give you an update on all the activities here related to the project itself and the proposed amendment. And I'm going to turn it over to Todd Mitchell.
Thank you, Commissioners. Excuse me. So we actually are 2 years into the lease with Aramark Beer Gardens, which is now officially named their business the Loose Cannon. We are literally one tiny item away from pulling the building permit. We thought we were going to be there today, but we're not quite. But it's literally filing a form to delay the fire inspection for the hood system until the hood system is actually installed. It's a form that the fire department needs. But I just wanted to go over some of the discussions points here. It wasn't the intention of the staff that when the lease was signed, that the beer garden would be ready to turn over the suites by September, or I'm sorry, by January of last year, and that they would be open for business in September. We had a bit of hurdles to come or get over with regard to the city and also with some of the architectural work that needed to be done to get the interior, which was the exterior, the facade project, and the roof project done. Those delays slowed us down in turning over the suite to the tenant. The tenant has struggled pretty mightily, their team, I should say, with getting through the city as well. Lots of people involved in why it could have been done a little faster, but it just never really got there. So because the Port District didn't live up to our expectations of turning over the suite, we're recommending that the board continue to abate rent to a hard start date of July 1. Aaron Runnings, who is the owner of Aramark Beer Gardens, couldn't be here tonight because he's buying video games for the place in Las Vegas today. He did share with me his enthusiasm and his confidence to be able to open for business on July 1. So irrespective of whether or not he meets that deadline, he is committed to start paying rent on that date. That is the true fiscal impact of the recommendation here. But I do want to address one other element that's here. Our lease contemplated completing certain elements of the building the entire time. The delay in the permitting, which would have both permitted some of his work and some of our work, means we can't even start some of our work. Some of it has been done. Joe referred to the electrical. Some of the work, which is reimbursable already, for example, the plumbing, has been completed. We did that, but I want to focus on the component here. So one of the recommendations is to shift fiscal fiscal or financial reimbursement from us directly paying a contractor to us reimbursing the tenant. This is not changing the district's obligation under the lease. So the electrical, purchasing HVAC units and installing them, some modifications to ADA access in the parking lot. These were all, well, I won't say that was originally contemplated. We didn't know that was needed until later, but these are all things that can't be started until the permit is pulled. So rather than having two contractors working in the same space at the same time, the recommendation is to have Mr. Running compensate his contractors for work that was contemplated for us to do under the lease. So I want to be clear that we're not throwing money to bail him out of some problem he had. We're moving money to him to reimburse one contractor to complete the work. So the fiscal impact really is the change in the abatement of the rent. So far, the general manager has had the ability to abate rent until this point. That is stopped now. So now we are asking for, we're recommending that the board approve continuing to abate rent until July 1. And that is the true fiscal impact, other than we're shifting the vehicle of how the money is flowing to the contractor. So happy to answer any questions about the recommendation, the proposed amendment. So that's my report.
I just wanted to also add and thank Todd and Joe to continue to work with the tenant and the city to be on the eve here of what appears to be a full building permit. You know, again, I think Todd alluded to this. There could be a lot of reasons why it could have gone faster. It didn't. Technically, it's not our obligation to chase a third party's permit around City Hall, but I would say in this case, it's obviously mutually beneficial. And you know, I participated in some of those meetings and discussions, but certainly those two have been trying to track this on a weekly basis, along with Jessica Snipes as well.
Okay, before I turn it over to the commissioners, let me just ask if there's any public comments. Seeing none in the room, do we have any online?
Yes.
Yeah, Tom wants to speak.
I wanted to ask a question. If the tenant's contractor is going to be doing some of the landlord's work, is he paying prevailing wage?
I don't know that that was contemplated. Is that a requirement?
I need to think about it. If he's doing any public work, that is a prevailing wage requirement. So if that's something that is allocated to the district, I just have to think about it. It's been a long day. And you can approve it subject to that resolution of that issue, if you like.
Okay, any other public comments, Jessica? All right, so we'll close public comments on this issue, bring it back to the commissioners. Thoughts, questions, Tony?
I was just hearing this is one of these cases teach us in project management of a critical path that a phase. You have a successor task and a predecessor task, and if one of them delays the other, the whole thing gets delayed. So that's my perception, you know, sort of what happened. Well, what happened is you can't do anything without these other things going on. So to me, you know, that's understandable. And to Tom's point, yeah, if there's a prevailing wage issue, I think that has some type of modification, if it's applicable, needs to be put in there.
Understood.
And thanks for bringing that up, Tom. That's a good one. But I like your solution because it's efficient, and hopefully we can work through that issue. But I'm so much better than having two contractors out there being paid separately and all of that. So I applaud you for that effort. Originally they were hoping to be open in September, right? Was that, I believe you said. So what's their target now?
July 1.
To open? Oh, okay. Very good.
So they have been able to do work under the city issued them a courtesy permit. And so when the question came up earlier this evening about in our departmental report showing some of the work and had concrete been poured and so on. So they've already been underway. I think the point is that they're confident enough that they're willing to begin paying rent on July 1. So whether it's 15 days here or there, I guess, you know, or a month, we'll find out. But in terms of them proceeding, and again, should have a contract, should have a permit in hand within, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours or so. Yeah.
All right. So that gives them 3 months, April, May, June, to finish the construction. A lot of work to do, but you signed up for it. So unfortunately my monitor died here, but I think the July 1 date, I don't see much concern about that. The other more complicated issue, the one that Tom just mentioned, is the transfer of work responsibility over to the other contractor. So from what I understand, thank you. Not costing the district anymore. We're just taking what the amount that we budgeted, basically providing that to the tenant.
Yeah.
And then the tenant is going to manage the contracts and manage his staff. So, okay. Yeah, I want to look at
Again, the recommendation.
This monitor guide?
Wasn't there three on the...
There's sub-recommendations in this now.
Yeah, isn't there...
How about this? Can I? I'll make it. Give it a shot. Move the recommended action, pending legal counsel review of the prevailing wage issue.
Second.
And the recommended action is the July 1st date, and then the movement of the fiscal responsibility.
It's actually an amendment.
Approving amendment number one to the agreement.
All right. Oh. I got a motion and a second. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none opposed. Your amendment is approved. And we look forward to a lot of work in the next 3 months.
Yeah.
All right, we are going to move on to... No, run out. You're okay. I'll plug this in if I want, but... we're going to move on to standard agenda item number four, approval of a statement of work and PSA for MRI software. So,
yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Todd will give the presentation. I believe Gloria is online if either he or board has additional questions. But Todd?
Yeah. So the board approved staff changing accounting software about 2 years ago now. The shift was due to the fact that the software previously we were using did not really have a property management accounting functionality built into it. It was accounting, and property management was done through Excel spreadsheets. The transition wasn't painless. No software transition of that nature really is. We did achieve a lot of really great things with the transition, meaning tenants can now look at their statements online. Tenants can make digital payments online. We are able to input a lease and have the information carry through and capture the data not in Excel spreadsheets that where there's the potential for human error in many iterations. Now it's once captured, and there's still room for continued growth with the software. However, customer service has lacked pretty significantly. And the accounting team has struggled with roadblocks that have come whenever software upgrades have taken place, where some sort of back-end update, like imagine your phone goes through an update and suddenly an app doesn't work anymore. And they also acquired one of the companies, the rent payment company, as an acquisition that happened during the process. And that has created speed bumps as well. It is an unsustainable problem in terms of the staff level of engagement required to keep the wheels on this. And we need help. The solution that staff is bringing forward is that we recommend that, as was contemplated under the original agreement, that we exercise the option to have an in-person expert from the software company, from MRI, come and be here to basically sit down in the chair and fix every problem as soon as our accounting team encounters it. We've provided a list of, I think, 15 or 16 individual things that we need fixing immediately and have needed for some time. So they'll come with a shopping list of things to solve. They'll be here to, what I have said to them is, live our pain and to transition out of the hamster wheel of problems that we've had. The reality is that there, with so many updates and things happening, there's probably things we don't know that have improved in the workflow that have never been part of the training that we've received. There's probably also some things in the back end that aren't really set up properly or as optimally as they could be, which would be a benefit for us to get fixed. The worst case scenario here is we determine that the software company is, moving at bleeding edge technology pace and can't actually support the product updates that they're doing. Our contract allows has another year in it before a 2-year option to extend. This would kind of be the decision point where if we determine that they are not going to be able to get us to live a happy life, then it's time to actually contemplate transitioning out in time before this contract completely expires. That is truly, truly a worst case scenario. And that is obviously not what we want to do, but I think it's reasonable that we spend a little bit of money here, not a little, but spend some money here to make sure that we're maximizing the use of the software and not making a snap decision to bail out just because we're having a tough time, but not continue to put the accounting department through a lot of pain and suffering when there's probably solutions that are out there. That's my report. Happy to answer any questions, as is, I'm sure, Gloria.
Before I turn it over to the commissioners, do we have any public comment? No public comment in person, no public comment online. We'll close public comment. Commissioners, Brian, you're first up.
Let me start off. Thanks, Todd. And having read the report, I sort of got the feel of it that obviously there's a number of situations. There's some pluses and obviously some minuses, and any transitions is never seamless, especially when a lot of people are, you know, especially new systems. So I can understand that. I guess my big question is, as you said, going to hit the ground running because there's a list of things that need to be fixed and sitting somewhere in an office. Where are they located in presently?
So MRI is an interesting company. It's being at one of the tech fields that they are. Most of their staff is actually remote. They are based in the east side of the Great Lakes. I can't remember the exact city. But you know, our interactions with them is, you know, they're generally all Eastern time zone, some mountain, mm-hmm. and you know, it's who knows where they're all coming from.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important, is having somebody physically here that knows the ability to do that. I know there's a continuing $5,000 cost to that, but I think that's really a pittance when it comes to the time and energy of perhaps the accounting department and the stress they're going through, I think is an important piece of it. I guess, I just, you know, want to think that, you know, when they go out for contracts, they're going to ask, you know, people are going to say, who are your clients? And they're going to ask, and I would hope that they were working overtime to make sure that we give them a five-star rating. in the new world of five-star ratings, that's what people look to. So not that we're going to, you know, it's not all one-sided. There's obviously learning things on staff side is on our side is tough too. So, and I guess the end result is it's making it easier for the tenants initially, but there perhaps is some other things that our tenant partners would be able to gain with this system up and running much better. So do you anticipate that?
Yeah, I can say that when the tenant portal initially rolled out, it was quite an exercise for tenants to make percentage rent payments in particular, to report the sales, which would calculate the number, and for them to be able to go into their ACH from their bank account and pay that amount. But wait, you've already made this payment, and this hasn't posted yet. There was really a lot. It was complicated. They've made a lot of streamlined improvements to that. That's great. Still a lot of room for improvement further. But yeah, knowing that there's more improvement possible and seeing that they have made improvements leads me to believe that there's a way out of this, but they have to show that commitment by not being file a service ticket. We'll get back to you. Why didn't you get back to me? When are you getting back to me? When are you going to fix it? Oh, the next update's coming out at the end of March. And that's not the kind of customer service, you know, we can continually go through. We need something better than that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. This isn't surprising to me. And I don't think this is a lot of money for what governments I've worked for, what we had to go through in doing it. This is a growing issue, I think, with the software company, of going to a software as a service platform. And then what you were saying about the updates. The other thing is, it's a challenge to integrate leasing software with an ERP. It's tough. I was rather surprised when I saw, oh, we can do it and the customers can go on. I'm going, wow, that's pretty darn good. So I see that it's a challenge. One of the things I would recommend is also seeing if there's an MRI software users group and communicating with some of the members there about some of these things that aren't done. As far as the lack of response, I'll tell you, in IT, people are getting up and moving like you wouldn't believe. So it could be that there's a brain drain on some of them too. I think this is the best approach of getting help, getting it fixed, and then looking and then taking your data and going elsewhere if the port, you know, Gloria decides to do that. But this isn't surprising. This happens all the time in the public sector software.
Yeah, I'll just quickly respond to your comment about the users group. MRI's principal customer, they are is commercial, but it's apartment buildings. And so they were a little thrown for a loop by the complexity of our leasing. We have rent structures that are based on minimum rent, for example, the master tenants, minimum rents with, you know, this percentage for this, this percentage for that, this percentage for that. Where, because it's a whole array of different activities. Then we have village leases, which is an office. It's simple, it's one number. There's just such a broad spectrum that they really struggle to even wrap their heads around multiple, you know, structures. There is no user group that there is no users like us in their system. There are other government agencies. We did do some outreach to get like a vote of confidence before we actually selected the software. But the level of complexity of our leasing structure is enormous compared to pretty much everyone else. So I think going back to my comment about bleeding edge, I think we are helping them figure out how to be better at their business. And that's coming at a bit of a cost to us, which is something we need to change.
We're all familiar with the phrase time is money. So, how many days are they going to be here for your $5,000?
The 5,000 is a travel cost, and that's 2 weeks.
So, there'll be somebody sitting at a desk here for 2 weeks working with the guys.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not long. Based on my experience, although I don't know the software well enough, and maybe that's plenty, but it's, you know, it takes time for them to, how should I say? I think sitting here, it takes them a few days to fully appreciate what you do. You know what I mean? And vice versa, right? And for staff to understand where they're coming from. There's this communication process that has to go on. And so I mean, I think that's good. I think that's pretty ambitious to try and handle this in a couple of weeks, but I completely agree with you that you need to do this. You need to see where you stand, and make a decision sooner rather than later whether or not you're going to stay, keep trying to row this boat.
Yeah,
Yeah.
our accountant, Jessica Perkins, has been working on the homework list. We'll be
Okay.
having a pre-meeting before they come out to ensure that the selected technician is fully versed in the problems we expect them to solve, so they land without, you know, like I don't know what I'm supposed to do today. It's like, no, these are the things you're supposed to do. By the way, I'm going to come get you and sit down at my desk as soon as something goes wrong.
Did they ever come and do any on-site training when you guys went live? Okay.
It was all virtual. That was not the most optimal, and a lot of the training actually happened before the database was fully set up, which meant a lot of it was scenario based and not, here
Gotcha.
is the lease
Okay.
for tenant X, and
Okay.
let's go through that. So, and then again, there was an acquisition of the rent payment system during the process of the migration.
Okay.
So yeah, this we never did fully expend our training budget initially. And we've been under budget for the last couple of years. I don't see that as necessarily an excuse to
No.
spend the money. I'm just saying that we didn't fully utilize the money that was there, but I think now is the time that we need to do that.
I understand. I just think it's good. Get him in here, see if you can get this thing nailed down, and then you'll know where better, you'll have a better idea where you stand to either take one of your two paths that you're
Right.
gonna have.
I think to your point about the schedule, one of the things that I've talked with accounting staff about is
is having sort of a debrief. If it's about a 2 week period of time, doing a debrief at the end of each day, just internally, you know, how was today? What did you get from it? What didn't you get from it? So that by the time the next day starts, we're already providing real time feedback on what we thought went well or didn't. So, yeah.
Tony, get on there.
I was gonna move they approve the statement of work under the existing professional services agreement with MRI Software.
Second. Oh, your mic's off.
I got a motion and a second, but I don't want to hold off on that vote because I got a couple questions yet. This person who's going to come out, are they doing configuration settings and training for the staff, or are they going to make mods to the software to accommodate our unique needs?
So we haven't fully fleshed that part of the conversation out. My anticipation is that they probably won't be modifying the software because it is a multi-user. It's like, you know,
it's a cost product.
It's a product that everyone's using. Not if they were to modify the product, it would be modifying it for all users. So it might, a modification that might solve a problem for us might come out as a release at a future date. The other part of that is configuring our data within the software. There could be things that may need to be reconfigured. There may be, like, if we set up the report this way, you hit the button and you're going to get the answer you wanted that you struggled so hard to make. So there's probably a balance between workflow improvements, sorting our data better into the software, and then going back and asking for technical modifications to the software itself. And those last, I do not see happening on site.
Right. So you talked about putting in trouble tickets and not getting the timely response. Do we have visibility into their trouble log?
Oh, no. Not the way you're asking the question. I'm sure would not meet what you were hoping to hear.
Yeah, I would. Hopefully you could log in and see, yeah, Port District trouble ticket called in on February 2nd and assigned to Joe, and here's the status.
No, Jessica and Jessica track that in-house and chase them.
Yeah. Okay. That may be a question you pose to the company.
That's good. It's a good suggestion.
The person who's coming out, are they somebody that we've dealt with? Are they somebody that knows the Port District, or are they coming out here and starting from ground zero?
The individual hasn't been identified because we asked them, can they do this? And they said no. So we said, well, then they can't come. So we are making sure that we're picking the best candidate for the job.
Yeah, you might want to ask for their background or resume. How long have they been with the company? How well do they know the software? And what's that person's? This will be a difficult question for them to answer, but I would ask it anyway. What do you expect is that person's future with the company? Are they going to be there a year from now, 2 years from now, right? We are making an investment in, what's the name of this company, MRI? We're making an investment in MRI. We would expect that investment is paid off because this software engineer is going to become the subject matter expert. And we want to know that person's going to be with the company. Me as a company owner, then that's the guy I'm investing in because I have an important customer that I don't want to lose. If that's the kind of behavior that we see from MRI, then maybe that's the partner we want to keep doing business with.
That's an interesting recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, if they say, look, guys, we're in apartment buildings and you guys are a pain in our tuchus, then maybe that's the answer to the question, right? Maybe they're the wrong thing. But we're in this mode of you buy a COTS software package, you got to adapt to the COTS software. Trying to move that needle is very tough because they got to look at their industry. Some software companies make those mods, but they end up those companies sometimes end up getting so diluted that they lose sense of what their product is and they don't last. So
I can say that we have had some modifications done. They haven't always been timely, but when they've been done, they've actually have worked out well. Our tenant statements were all customized to be the way we want them to look. That's been a huge improvement. We're really happy with that.
Well, so that kind of responsiveness is it's a good sign.
It is. When we get the right person, we get exactly what we want.
Oh. Okay, so now I'm going to, now that I said my piece, I'm going to go back. I have a motion and a second to approve the statement of work under this professional services agreement and increase the budget as shown. So all in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, you got an approval. All right, that was a full night, some very big projects coming to fruition. And we will, when's the next time we're getting back together?
April
3rd, next meeting. All right, so we will adjourn for the night and see everybody again on April 3rd. Thank you.